one other story I might tell you. A man named Joseph Sturge. I think you perhaps have met his name in connection with the anti-slavery movement. In 1854, there were difficulties in Europe between Russia and England. Joseph Sturge, with two other friends, went to the capital of Russia, which was then St. Petersburg, met the Tsar and his foreign secretary and his wife, the Tsarina, explained that they, as Englishmen, were very sorry that these difficulties were being allowed to develop, which were leading to tension and likely to lead to war. And again, talking to the quite intimately as private English citizens with the authorities in Russia. I want to remind you that the Russians were devoutly religious people. All these people were, especially the Tsarina. And the Quakers went as a religious concern, arguing that truly Christian people would not allow their countries to drift into mutual war. And this appealed to the Russians. And they were very friendly and gave the impression that they would do all they could to allay the hostility in Russia, especially if England would do the same. Of course, these Quakers went back to England. They couldn't promise anything. And unfortunately, even before they went back, the situation got much worse. They thought that they had found a friendly reception and the prospect of friendship. But at the very last session, where they were about to say goodbye to these Russian officials, they found the situation entirely changed. The mood was evidently different. They were very much cooler to them than they'd been before. And they couldn't understand why. And what they discovered was this, that meanwhile, copies of the London Times had been delivered in St. Petersburg, containing the very hostile speeches in Parliament against the Russians. And when these Russian officials read those, they knew that these Quakers were only speaking for themselves, and that they suspected the Quakers couldn't stem the war spirit in England, and it couldn't. And the war broke out. This is called the Crimean War, lasted for 2 years, and began by an attack by the British fleet on the coast of Finland. Finland was then part of Russia. And they bombarded that defenseless shore with its fishing villages and destroyed a good many of the houses, boats, and sheds used by the Finnish fishermen. I'll go on with the story, though I finished what I was going to say about it. Here was a case of failure to prevent a war, an unnecessary and devastating war. After the war was over, Joseph Sturge, same man, raised a lot of money among English friends and took it over to Finland, which was, of course, a minor part of Russia and not at all responsible. And by careful inquiry, they found out what damage had been done by the British bombardment, found out who had suffered and how much, and paid back as a gift to the Finns that had been injured the equivalent of their financial loss. John Bright was a Quaker and in the cabinet for many years, including this time. And he made an effort in the government, just as a member of Congress made his effort back in 1798. So John Bright, throughout his whole career, made an effort to allay the war spirit in Great Britain and to prevent unnecessary war. I think I quoted his remark the other day, didn't I? That he discovered, as he looked back over British history, that the English had engaged in wars for 200 years, which in the light of subsequent information ought never to have been gone into, and could have been avoided. As to my second point, I think that's perhaps best illustrated by the history of early Pennsylvania.
What's the last word in the second one?
Justice. It's interesting that the Indian, who had about as bad a reputation in among civilized people as Nazis or communists have today, probably worse, were nevertheless could be handled in this way in Pennsylvania and in other places where the fringe had any control of government policy. This is a hardly needs anything more to be said for it. Though I might give some illustrations from Quaker experience between more civilized nations. For example, here is a man named Price, Joseph Price, owned a ship. Being a Quaker, this was during the Napoleonic Wars, he let the ship travel the high seas without any defense. It was captured by a French man of war and boarded by the captain of the warship. And the captain of the warship looked all over the ship, said, "Why, there's no military equipment on board. How's that?" And the captain of the ship, of the captured ship, said, "This ship is owned by a Quaker, and they do not believe in war. Therefore, they have no protective armament on the ship." And the French captor thought for a while, and he let the ship go. That was the end of that episode. He rather impressed the owner of the ship later, and he was the man that suggested the formation of the peace society, the end of the Napoleonic War. And I expect, since military people use the illustration of individual encounter as an analogy for national encounter, examples of non-resistance, disarmament, and so on in private life could be quoted as analogous to this. One illustration is in the Civil War in Ireland in 1698, when the Quakers regularly avoided having any firearms in their houses and regularly took a neutral position. And the result was that they were alternately, their homes were alternately searched by one side and then by the other side, and they became, they did what they could to help the people that had been, that had lost their property or lost some of their family. But not a single Quaker lost his life, and very few of the Quaker houses were destroyed. Simply their obvious freedom. And there are, of course, a good many Indian stories of the same sort.